Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Research VR podcast. I am your host, Oz Balabanian, and with me today is Hassan Karuni and Vasanth Mohan from Fused VR. Welcome, guys.
Thanks for having us, Oz.
Good to be here.
Yeah, today we are doing things a little differently. Peter isn't co-hosting, and we're actually hosting this in Altspace VR, actually. It's a new, it's one of the OG, obviously, social VR experiences. We're holding like swords and masks and staffs in our hands for some reason, but
why not?
Yeah, because why not? We're in VR.
I mean, I've never played World of Warcraft, but I kind of always wanted to try that out. I feel like we're getting pretty close right now.
Yeah,
just holding things. I feel so, like,
yeah,
yeah. One day when we actually can touch these swords and staffs that we're holding, that'll be the day.
Yeah.
Before we jump into like news and whatnot, let's do a short little introduction as to what you guys are doing. You have a really popular YouTube channel for VR developers that once a week you put out a video and a live stream teaching people how to create things in VR and AR in using Unity.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, you hit it on the spot. I mean, we've even had you on. The goal of the YouTube channel really is to get more people creating in any way possible, because we think VR and even AR, they just need a ton more content. And that's really what's kind of holding it back. So any way we can help to actually get VR and AR just having a lot of more content and getting more people developing is a huge win for us.
Right. And yes, I mean, your YouTube channel actually has been one of the resources that I've consulted to and find. And, you know, every time I search for something, how to do X in Y, and that Y being like VR related in Unity, you probably have a video on it, whether it's like how to teleport and just figure out how to set up your first, you know, VR environment, or how to do a lot more complicated things. And usually I've seen it be kind of timely with a certain, you know, game or movie coming out.
Yep.
How to do X in that thing in VR. So it's been a huge resource. How can people find it actually in YouTube?
If you go to youtube.com/fuseman, all of our videos are there. We have anything from tutorials to our live streams. Our live streams are really a lot of fun for us to do. Mm-hmm. And we also have been recently doing creator chats, which we bring on someone from the community and we just talk VR and like what they've learned and kind of just sharing that knowledge. So it's just so much fun to do.
Yeah, awesome. We'll go a little bit deeper into, you know, what you guys have done and talk a little bit about how you're actually like putting these curriculums together. But first, let's jump into the news. This week, or I guess it's been about a week since our last episode, the first thing we're going to talk about, I think the biggest news of the week, is the Logitech's new Tracker keyboard that they announced. Mm-hmm. That it's basically a keyboard you can have with you in VR, you know, and that they do some clever things to show your hands with it. You guys as developers, I think you'd probably be the target audience for this. Have they announced the consumer, or this was this kind of a developer kit that they're putting out? I don't know.
It was developer only. So the way I understood it was like they have like an application and like only like 50 developers are going to get like this Logitech keyboard with the tracker. Actually, I don't even know if it comes with the tracker. It was kind of weird. And you guys, I guess you have to have like a specific application in mind in order to apply it. I don't really have one in mind at the moment. I think it's a very interesting device, but nothing really comes to mind, especially from the consumer side of how they would actually use it.
I'd be really disappointed if it doesn't just work as like a Steam VR object into any game. Like But it sounded like you have to like implement it to your own experiences, and that's why they're like doing SDKs and developer kits out.
Yeah. I was going to say, I mean, either way, it's interesting. Like, I feel like in the ideal case, it's just this tracked object that you can use in your game and have a keyboard. But at the same time, I feel like from a design perspective, it just seems like it's a little lazy and not enough. You know, like, I'd like to see more thought go into like keyboard input and typing in VR. And I think there's been a lot in the space, and it's awesome to have something for a keyboard that could just come out of the box. But still, I think there's a lot of space to think about when in VR, what are other good ways to do input.
It does seem a little tacked on, that's for sure.
Yeah. Like,
you know, it's just, it's essentially, it's a corner with a vibe tracker on it. And I would like to see things that they could have done maybe with capacitive touch on the keyboard, where, like, you know, it can know if your fingers are on it, and then that's how we could figure out hand position and finger positions. But I guess skins are nice, right? Like, you can put virtual skins on them, and I think where it gets interesting is, like, specific games, like, having button layouts with, like, you can think of, like, diegetic UI coming off of, like, the keys on the keyboard. Like, that would be really cool if you want to play, like, 2D games in VR.
It's interesting, because I don't know if they would do if it's designed for games or if it's designed for actual applications. What do you think, Hassan?
I think applications, probably, because I think about, like, the keyboard itself would be tracked, but you still need to put it down on something, which I feel like is interesting, because that thing is probably not tracked. So then I guess it works really well if you have a, like, seated VR application. Like, it would probably work really well in more enterprise or just, like, big screen type things. In a game, I guess if you have a seated game, that works. It
should be
too.
A weapon, actually, like, hitting with your keyboard.
That would be epic. I know that's going to be an application. That's going to be an application.
Maybe we. Well, oh, maybe you heard it first. You'll see it on Fuse.
Somebody's going to make a typing game out of it. I don't know when you guys were learning to type way back when, but I remember there were those games around. If you type at certain words per minute, you get better guns and you can shoot zombies and stuff like that. Man. And then there's Mavis Beacon Teaches Typing, which was not exciting at all.
Dude, yeah, the typing games that I had to play in school had, like, bugs that you had to squash. Like, nothing gun-related. You're like Frogger and you're trying to jump across the streets.
I think there was this game that, I think it was either E. McNeil or Everyday VR made, that it was like, you have a bunch of, like, letters that are coming up to you, and I think this was, like, DK2 days, like, we barely even had, like, hand controllers even, and so you're just like, you see these letters coming at you, like, spatially, and then you have you just have to type the letters as they come. I remember it being surprisingly hard. I can't remember where I saw it, but, like, I imagine a tracked keyboard would make this a lot easier.
Totally.
Yeah,
I can imagine that working, perhaps, I like, with a Leap Motion or something, like, try and see where your hands are. But yeah, I think that's an interesting piece of news, at least, that there's more hardware people getting into it, and yeah, Logitech would probably be one of the first to do it.
Have you guys ever heard of, just bringing up a point, I think Oz, we actually may have talked about this on the creator chat, but have you guys heard of the Twiddler before? It was a predecessor to mobile keyboard input. So, well, I don't know if it was a predecessor or if it came out after, but the long story short is that it was like a handheld, similar to the size of like a Rift Touch controller. And you could type just by using your fingers. Like, you didn't really need to look at anything.
Right.
It was like what they found
on your fingers, right? It was this thing that
similar to that.
Right, like, almost like a punch.
And it works really well. But the thing is that it has a high curve, like a high learning curve. So people would default to keyboards and mobile keyboards and touch input rather than use this thing. Because even though you could get faster in the long run, the initial curve to getting used to it was too high. But I still want to see something like that for VR.
I'm totally there with you. And I think that's also, you highlighted the reasons why, like, something like a Dvorak keyboard, like, doesn't, you know, widely used, even though it's, you know, there's other keyboard layouts other than QWERTY that actually can do typing more efficiently. But I think the one question I have with, maybe humans will be, it'll be easier for people to get to this type of typing, would be, and I haven't tried it yet, but with eyes, right? Like, with eye tracking, that was what iFluence's whole thing was, was that they were really claiming that you could type really efficiently with their eye keyboard. And it's not by, like, squinting or, like, looking, but it's, like, very micro staccato movements that you can do over things to select and like, almost like swiping through the letters. But I don't know if that's going to be, like, a thing. Like, I have, like I said, I haven't even tried it, but it's the one that
I think my guess would be it works for, like, short things, like maybe a username or password, but, like, you're going to get eye fatigue, especially, like, depending on how big that keyboard is. it might also depend on how accurate it is, but like I feel like eye fatigue is probably the big concern there.
It's interesting to try. If anyone here on the here, by here I mean the audience, if anyone has tried iPhones or anything with eye tracking, maybe with the Tobii, you know, Vive headsets, let us know your thoughts. I'm actually very curious to see what people think about it. So the second piece of news I do want to talk about, and this is kind of a personal thing because I really, really like it. Echo Arena is now going to be permanently free on the Oculus store, on the Oculus Home store.
Wait, oh, really?
Yeah,
I missed that.
Yep.
Yeah, news to us.
Oh my god. I mean, I saw like all these Reddit posts leading up to it. They're like, "Oh, get it today! It's gonna be the last. It's gonna be the last day.
Yeah.
It's free," and like all this hype. And then they're like, "Oh yeah, we're gonna make it free." I feel like every deal in VR is kind of sticking to that. Like, you know, even the Oculus. The price drops and everything. They're like, "Oh, it's gonna end soon," and then they're like, we're gonna stick with this because
it's actually like, well, JK.
Yeah, and this will kind of lead us. I want to talk about this topic, which you guys actually have. I just watched a video that you did in terms of like the state of VR from a developer's perspective.
Yeah.
And is there any like money to be made right now as a, you know, indie developer, and you know, why are these and how these pricings are working? Should we talk about that now? Yeah, we can get into it a little bit now. So you had a video. We had a video this week, right? This month.
Yep.
About
just yesterday, actually. Yeah.
Oh, nice. It popped up on my subscriptions feed. And why don't you? Yeah, I guess you can give us a little summary in terms of what your points were.
Yeah. So like high level, it was a little more about like how we've evolved since the Rift first launched way back when, like, Lucky's Tale was the actual launch title. And it was a time when we didn't even have hand controllers for the Rift. We only had a gamepad, which is on, I think we can all agree that that's such a lousy input mechanism. And basically just kind of talking a little bit about how much we've evolved from that state and what's been like a year and a half. It's like not much time. And so anyone like it's just like one of those things to address, like, is VR failing? Yes, no, blah, 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 blah. Like, it's like, I mean, if you're talking about like where we were back then, maybe, but like we've grown so much and like headsets are in so many people's hands now, like not as much as I think we would all want, but like it's still in this very much growing state and it's growing pretty fast. And that's so cool.
Right. Yeah. Just not as quick as, you know, the early numbers and predictions that would come from random, you know, analyst groups. Like, you remember those, you know, like one was like Super Nintendo or like,
geez.
I don't know. Everybody would use them in their pitches, you know, like, look, money, exactly. Like it's all hockey sticks.
Well, what's frustrating about it is there's so much, especially from just popular media, so much incentive to just sensationalize things and warp numbers. And I mean, it even applies to the analyst places. I mean, sure, you have bigger places, like I guess Gartner would be one example, where they don't want to put out false posts because they have a long-term reputation. But you could think about other places where they just want to have like this crazy forecast that everybody needs to read and then charge like $500 for people to get access to it. It really sucks. Like, sensationalizing the tech space is just something that it goes bigger than VR, but has definitely impacted VR too.
Yeah, no, I think developers are the ones that are like suffering from it the most because,
yeah.
So there was an interesting post that I read this week, and I don't think it's an isolated incident in terms of like sales numbers that they were kind of the only ones that put out. The developer I'm talking about is are the people behind Serious Sam, like down in, I believe they're from Croatia. What was the studio called?
Oh, yeah. The Crow Team. I think that's what it was.
Yeah. Great group of people. One of the developers recently just in a Reddit comment basically posted that like, yeah, our newest, you know, the Solus project that they put out, which I had read like good things on Reddit about, only sold 5,000 copies. And they're like, I don't know if we can keep making VR games. And they're I think one of the more supportive developers of VR because they've put out maybe three or four titles already, and they've been you know, like remakes of older things, but like they've just been consistently pushing. So I don't know, it was sad to hear that. And in terms of like, I get it, if you're not one of the big titles that just like keeps getting talked about on Reddit.
Mm-hmm.
There, I feel like there isn't that much money to be made from that. Like, there are definitely profitable companies in VR and especially games. But
yeah.
What are you guys' thoughts in terms of reading numbers?
Like, I mean, I think we can take this back to Echo Arena. Like, I mean, it's. I think it's great that it's free, but like, that's money they're losing. And I don't know how popular Lone Echo is versus Echo Arena. And I also don't know what how much money Oculus is putting into like actually making Echo Arena an esport, which maybe that's like the long term goal, and like I think that's great. But like right now, it's almost the inverse problem of what Serious Sam is having and what the Solus Project is having. Is that I'm sure they have probably tens, maybe hundreds of thousands of downloads, but if they didn't make any money off of Echo Arena, like that's a problem for them too. We're in this interesting state of like how do you actually make money in VR, and that's like the really tricky part that I don't know anyone has a solution for right now. And that's again one of those things going back to like we're gonna have to keep evolving.
It's just scale. Yeah. I mean, it's honestly scale, and when
yeah.
the scale isn't all there for smaller, more niche titles to really take off, then you know you can't really expect that to like
exactly.
You know, you have to make something good, and it has to be like talked about a lot, and like they have to do a lot of things correctly to be like one of the top titles, like for a PUBG to take off kind of situation.
Yeah.
And that's a whole other story in terms of like PC space. You know, that's insane for a developer to come out of nowhere and put out a title that can that's had the most concurrent users online, I think.
Is that correct? Exactly. Yeah. I think that's right.
I think so.
Yeah, and I'd summarize it as I think for a lot of developers, it's only worth really getting into the space right now if you're in it for the long haul and excited about the journey and experimentation. Mm-hmm. Going back to the whole sensational media concept, I think that for a long time it was pitched as get into VR, it's hot, you can make millions and whatnot, but that's really not the case. Like, it's so hard to reach people, like we're talking about, hard to make money. It's also hard to make something that's good. It's easier than I think some people expect, but it's still not easy. And so I think that it only makes sense if you're in it for the journey and willing to go through all of the ups and downs that come with it.
Yeah. And once scale comes around, I think with mobile, there's going to be a market that, you know, is willing and hungry to buy content. And I mean, we do have that now, but it's just not, you know, it's all relative in terms of like how much money can be made. If 10% of total users know about your game and, you know, 10% of that buys it, like, does that equal the amount of money that you've spent on the project? And that changes with different platforms. But
I wanted to dive a little bit onto the mobile space because we have ARKit and soon ARCore that are coming out. And Hassan and I were both at this meetup on Tuesday, right? I think it was Tuesday.
Halloween, woo!
Where we were demoing, and there was a bunch of other people who had already released ARKit apps. And I mean, you would think that ARKit has the scale that you're talking about, where it's millions and millions of users. And yet, we talking to each of these developers, we're like, wait a second, like they're not really, they're in the same boat as all these VR developers. And so I think even when we think about scale, it's not always necessarily about the number of headsets that are out there or the number of devices that support it. It's also about the number of users who are willing to experiment, and that has to grow as well. And that's a different problem that has to deal with marketing and like getting users in that mood.
And also I think the saturation of a certain market, right? Like, there aren't that many mobile apps that are being downloaded on a consistent basis because you already have your habits and your silos that you go into. And that's why like people are looking to jump into new platforms like this. But yeah, you're totally right. Like ARKit and ARCore, like you can call that as fatty as it can get in terms of like the hype
that
we built this summer over it. And that's it, like, I still think it's going to be applied pretty well. And on that news, actually, Amazon announced this week that they are integrating, you know, basically real scaled ARKit or ARCore views of your furniture or whatever item that you want to buy. So you can preview it on your table and desk, and everything will be proportional. I mean, that's cool, right? Like, that's where I think this all of these tools are going to be used, rather than creating an entire app around it, which I think some people have. But
yeah, so that's really interesting, and I just want to tell more about that meetup that we went to, because I think it was really telling in a lot of ways. It was ARBA. I think that's Augmented Reality Bay Area. So they must have some around, I think. But what was interesting about it is that this was a crowd of people that had been going to these meetups over and over again. They were very focused on augmented reality. We were setting up a demo for a game that we're building, and we took a few seconds to ask the audience questions. We asked them, how many of you have tried an AR kit app? And out of an audience of about 60 or 70 people, maybe like 5 hands went up.
Wow.
And I mean, this is San Francisco. It's an AR meetup. And 5
at
out of
Unity.
About 70, yeah, at Unity headquarters. And maybe 5 out of 70 people have tried an AR experience. So there's definitely something to, I mean, we could reach a lot of people, but people are still figuring out a lot about AR and VR. And then you were talking about just AR kind of being some icing on the cake instead of the cake itself. And one of the members of Unity, his name's Greg Madison, he was talking about that, trying to layer AR kit, AR core, and AR functionality into existing use cases rather than building entire apps or experiences around them. He thinks that's a really promising direction to go in.
Right. I think we in being in the thick of it all in terms of like the industry and all the technology that we know, you know, we read up on every week. But sometimes it's that approach leads us to like get too shoehorned into the technology that we're using, or like we have to, you know, apply this to that, and kind of like putting what's the term, like putting the wagon before the horse or something.
Yeah.
To that extent. I'm so bad with these English terms, but anyway, let's go with it. like the approach I think sometimes can be wrong, where you're trying to, you know, you have the solution to without the problem, and you're trying to find where that problem fits, but sometimes better integrations come because you have the problem, and you're like, oh, I think a camera would work really well in this situation, like Amazon's.
Yeah.
Thing. So, anyway,
and I think it's okay to have the wagon before the horse, or like having the solution before you actually find the problem.
Right.
But I think it's the real issue is like dwelling on it and like trying to keep like making things work, as opposed to like experimenting, seeing if it actually works, and then trying to fail early and then moving on from what you've learned. I think that's the real problem that we need to actually fight.
Great point. Yes. I mean, it's really good to experiment, and maybe perhaps you do have the solution to something. You're like, I know this is going to be useful. I don't know what for, but it has so much potential. So yes, you have to iterate on those ideas and see what's actually going to stick. But yeah. So let's move on to our next topic. So Microsoft is joining OpenXR and is becoming a decisive backer in an open royalty-free VR AR standard. Hooray, hooray. We have people.
Never saw that coming.
I'm glad. We're just happy that they're agreeing to a standard. I don't know if there's more news to cover in terms of talking about this subject.
Well,
what do you guys think?
Yeah, I mean, I think standards are great. I think my big problem with the whole OpenXR, and I think this also in part goes with the Kronos group, is it almost feel like there's a bunch of elite people that are trying to set rules without having to experiment, if we're going back to that theme. And I mean, it almost feels like, because we're pretty close with the VRTK community, and those guys, they're constantly experimenting and just adding a bunch of features to this really open and amazing platform for developing on. And I mean, I haven't followed up with like their affiliation with like this OpenXR movement. And like, while I think it's great that we're moving to open standards, I don't want to get shoehorned into this issue of like, this is the only open standard,
right,
which I feel like a bunch of these big players might be going towards, which I'm like, I'm not sure what's going to happen, but I could see negative consequences also happening from
it. No, that's really interesting to hear. It does do the VRTK. Actually, we should probably introduce them. VRTK is a company and a group of people that have put together a set of tools for Unity for to have like all the standard. I don't know. I've used it for like locomotion and teleportation and scale.
Yeah.
Tools that you don't have to like rebuild yourself if there's already a kit like that. And you guys use them a lot for your tutorials. This is a great place to start. But what are their thoughts in terms of this? Like, are there kind of conflicting interests when it comes to building like a VRTK type of toolkit and OpenXR?
I mean, I don't think it's like. Go ahead.
Well, I think it just follows on what you were saying before, which is that if we acknowledge that the space is very nascent and still has a lot to develop and change over time, then a concern that I have is that if you have these big companies and, like Vasant was saying, people who aren't necessarily boots on the ground and implementing stuff, deciding the standards, then it's very possible that at the end, just because they were really big places, they end up setting the tone for a lot of the trends in the industry, and they neglect the voices of the people who are doing the boots on the ground stuff and being open source and getting feedback from the whole world. And I think it's just like there are parallels to, say, the internet or mobile, other tech trends. I mean, a concern for any big boom is that if you don't have everybody involved and have it all open in the very beginning, then it's very possible to develop standards and trends that aren't reflective of everybody's opinions. So, I mean, that's more of a philosophical concern, but I think it ends up affecting development too.
And it's not to say that it's like a bad thing. I think it's really good that these companies are working towards a standard, especially on the hardware side. It's just like, there are also like, there's always a double-edged sword to things. And so it's kind of figuring out like, let's try to focus on the good stuff and avoid the bad stuff that might happen.
Right. Yeah, and make sure everyone's involved too, or the right people are involved, I guess.
I guess my take on it is I haven't really seen or used anything from this whole OpenXR group, right? Like VRTK is a lot more useful to me. So perhaps, I guess to contradict that point, Microsoft is now supports like Steam VR because of this as well, which I guess is a, you know, that's a big benefit of having group. But I don't know if this piece of news actually means that right now the Steam VR compatibility is released for the Microsoft MR headsets. Do you guys know anything about that?
I don't.
Well, we should.
Sorry, maybe. I like lagged out like crazy there.
No, no worries.
You have like a TLDR on that question.
I'll just ask you. Do you know if Steam VR is now compatible with the Microsoft headsets?
Not yet. I think that's coming in a month. I think that was the last I heard. I haven't heard anything else since then.
I feel like everything is a month away.
I know, right?
And speaking of, actually, this week, some news got out that HTC is going to be showing off their Google Daydream, you know, six-stuff headset in China, and that I think they're having a conference and an event there, and that's going to be interesting to see. At least, you know, I don't think we've seen anything.
I feel like there's a little bit of misinformation going on. So there are two headsets. So one is, I think, I forget the names. One is like a China only standalone headset that I think has been out for a while, and then the other one is like the more, I don't know, international headset, or if it's the US headset, which is the one that they announced at Google I.O. It's possible that they show it at this China conference, but like I also feel a little skeptical about it because of the fact that there exists this like China-only headset and the conference is happening in China.
I didn't know about this China-only headset. I did hear one thing that they were going to release this headset in China first, but I think you might be more right if there is a, if there are two different things happening.
Yeah, well, it's that specific headset. It's whatever headset was like China. There's like a China only headset. I think the confusion might have been like people thought it was going to be China only and then expanded out to the US, but I don't. I think it's just China only, and there's a separate headset that's actually for the rest of the world.
Is the China,
which is kind of weird, but okay.
The fragmentation is crazy.
Are they all sixed off? Are they both? Like 6 degrees of freedom, or is one kind of
I'm not 100% sure. I thought both were sixed off, but I thought they were very similar, and it was also very confusing news when I read it, but like, it seemed like they're two similar headsets, but one is China only, and then the other is still TBD.
Gotcha. Makes sense.
Well, I'm excited for that conference. I just don't know what's going to be actually announced. So I'm kind of skeptical that there's actually going to be an announcement at that conference, but we'll never know.
True. Cool. I think that's it for news this week. And let's talk a little bit about you guys, our guests today. And I'll just as a reintroduction, you guys are from Fused VR, a pretty popular YouTube channel for tips and help and streams on how to develop things using Unity. And I think you guys have mostly just covered VR and AR. I don't know if you've like wanting to go any further than that, but that's definitely a huge need, is just a need for developers. Mobile has a ton, obviously. Like, we've had it for about 10 years now. People know how to build iOS and Android apps, and but 3D, I think, is not an inherently intuitive thing for developers to know.
Yeah, not at all.
Let's talk a little bit about your backgrounds. What were you guys doing 5 years? I don't know if you guys are that old. Let's say 5 years.
Five years ago.
I was in college, right?
Yeah. Five. Let's do some math.
2017. Yeah. Now, yeah, exactly. Right.
2012.
I was graduating high school.
So that's. Yeah,
I could go first.
Go for it.
So about 5 years ago, I was definitely in college. Both of us went to Stanford. That's actually where we first kind of met up. And then actually it was once we graduated that we started working together more. But 5 years ago, I actually was studying political science and hated all sorts of tech and engineering. But then if you spend enough time at Stanford, I think you kind of get absorbed into the tech bubble. So that's what happened to me. I ended up focusing a lot on design. That's like human-computer interaction, and just user experiences with tech was really exciting to me. And that's eventually what got me into VR and AR. Studying web and mobile design were really exciting because you have tons of users, but there are also tons of just very tried and true design methods. Whereas with VR and AR and just 3D in general, a lot of that stuff is a green field. Like, there's so much to just learn and experiment with. And that's what drew me to the stuff that we're doing now with Fused VR. I mean, we're teaching people, but there's also a heavy element of experimentation and prototyping. And that's really fun with VR and AR.
I think what you just said there in terms of design is still very much true today. Like, we've been saying for like 2 years, you know, like, it's still a green field. And for the most part, like, I still see new and novel things and polished apps all the time. I'm like, that's really neat. I hadn't thought of that. And I think we'll still have the like another 3-4 more years of just really
maybe cool longer,
maybe even longer. You're right.
Yeah.
I mean, things don't
because as the hardware changes, that changes too. Right.
Exactly. And I think the hardware's not even done yet.
And
Vasant, where I guess 5 years ago, where did you start?
So 5 years ago, when was the Rift DK1 announced? Was that around 5 years ago?
I think 2012.
Crazy. 2013. That's crazy. So I don't even remember if I heard of the Kickstarter or not, but like, yeah, we were in Stanford in our own little bubble because that's what Stanford does. And, I mean, I guess my VR, I knew I wanted to do 3D work, and specifically at the time it was more about games. So that's when I kind of started picking up Unity, and this was like Unity 3. So that's like three or four versions ago. It's kind of crazy. And then my senior year, I joined the Stanford VR lab, VHIL, which they focus a lot more, not so much on the development side of things, but kind of the psychology and the impacts that VR can have as you start to believe in the presence and things of that nature. So it's a very interesting lab. You might think that they were doing Unity at the time, but no, they were doing something called like WorldViz, which is in Python. I think they've finally started to adapt into Unity, but it's one of those things where like you're in research for a long time that you start like the technology finally catches up and then like worlds past you type of thing.
Yeah.
And like my senior year, it was definitely, definitely the case that we were a little behind. So yeah, that was fun. And then it was basically, I, at that point, kind of left school, started looking at ways or like where the VR industry was. And we were working on a project, which is basically turning your phone into a controller for especially mobile VR. And it was at that point, we like were looking at the industry and like who would use it. And we found there were like practically zero developers. And so it was at that time where like, okay, look, we got to fix that problem. So let's start a YouTube channel. Let's put out tutorials. And it's been a whirlwind process since then to like put out tutorials every week, or at least a video every week, just covering new topics and just kind of educating about the space and what we've learned and just sharing that knowledge.
Let's see. How many videos do you have out so far? Do you know the
account?
I'm looking at your channel, actually, scrolling.
It's probably
Let me see. Your first video was 2 years ago.
And more?
Yeah, we didn't like. We had like a few random videos that I've like just left up there about like the actual like Navi, which was that hand controller application I talked about.
Right.
There were probably like 6 or 7, maybe 8 of those types of videos, and then it was in April of 2016 that we actually started doing weekly tutorials. So that since then, I think it's been about like 80 or 90.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good amount, actually. I don't think. Yeah. I mean, I've seen a few, obviously, YouTube videos on random development things, but like no one that's been consistently added like you guys are. So props
also
to that.
Also, the spread.
Spread?
Yeah. So, I mean, you talked about Unity and AR and VR, and that's true. Just definitely the biggest bucket and the best way to generalize it. But we have some that are on building a first-person shooter, others on bows and arrows, some on web VR, much to the displeasure of Vasant.
We have other ones on VR.
2D stuff.
Not a fan.
do you want to talk about that for a second?
Yeah, I can.
Yeah, let's hear it. I'd love to hear it.
So, I mean, I guess that means Hassan's going to be pro web VR and I'm going to be anti web VR.
Well, if you
want to
make this into like the CNN crossfire show, you know, where we sit here, I'm the moderator. You guys are like left side, blue side.
All right,
get at it.
All right, let's do it. All right, I'll start. Okay, so I think my big problems with web VR are. I think some of them have been fixed, but I think the biggest problems are, especially now, is that performance. Two, I just don't think that HTML and JavaScript are the right ways to go about programming for a 3D environment, because, I mean, especially if you think of like frameworks like A-Frame, and I think some of this is changing, but like things like A-Frame where you're like manually typing in numbers for like the position and rotations and scales of thing is just not the right visual approach to how you should be designing for a 3D world. And that's probably one of my bigger problems with it. I do think from a consumer side, it could be nice. But I think even there are also big problems. Cause like literally if you go to like if you're trying to download a Vive or a Rift app, you're going to Steam or the Oculus store. You're not going to a web browser to actually find it. And even if you do find it, it's going to be a pain in the ass to actually find the headset and then put it on at that time that you actually find a VR content. Mm-hmm. So I think they're just like fundamental problems with the consumer side and the development side for now, up until now, and I think probably for the next several years that really make me dislike having to use it.
I mean, it's access is definitely a big concern, right? Like, and I feel like with VR, it's always kind of going to, I don't know, when you run across like a random piece of VR thing when you're on your laptop or a computer, there's barely any point where you're like, I'm going to go put on my headset to view this rather than like, this is a VR session. I'm going to sit down and do things that include in VR. But even with mobile apps starting to experiment more with like instant apps. I think Google has on the Google Play Store, where you don't actually have to download the full app, but like it downloads the essentials that you need, and just so you can kind of instantly go through into it. Mm-hmm. Do you think there's a future with that in for VR and AR, or you know what I mean? When
It's a good point, and it's actually another reason why I don't like Mobile VR is the streaming content. Because I mean, if you look at most apps that are out there on the store right now, they are probably 2 to 3 gigabytes worth of content, at least the good ones. And you're not going to be streaming that much content in. You're still going to have a wait period. And the problem with streaming, of course, is that you have to re-download the content every time, as opposed to having it locally. Mm-hmm. And that's also a pain on the user experience too. So I'm not sure.
Good point. All good points.
Yeah, I mean, I'd add in, I think that
give us your
a key point that just thinking about some of the stuff that Vasanth mentioned, like I'm not too worried about the tools, because I agree that it is weird in HTML or A-frame to be entering in, you know, like 360 coordinates pretty much, or three dimensions of coordinates. But that stuff is going to be addressed and already is. Like A-frame has an inspector. They added something into the default web inspector so that you can drag objects around in a scene similar to something like Unity. So I'm not too worried about the tools, but I think the big question is one that you brought up around how do people actually get to the experience. I think that maybe a year or two ago, it seemed a lot more reasonable that somebody would be sitting down and they would have a Rift set up at their computer. They would be browsing online. They would see something and then they would put the Rift on. Now that seems, I don't know, less and less feasible, especially because standalones are coming really fast. So I would say that's even an open question for me and something that the web VR community needs to figure out. Like, how are people actually going to get to these apps? What's the dominant way to interact with VR going to be? It might be through these stores. But the promise that we've seen with web VR is that web developers can really easily make the jump into VR development. That's really exciting to see. And then second, just the concept, like we were talking about before, of just using VR or AR to layer onto an existing experience, I feel like that is the promise of web VR, that you go to a website that's fully functioning, has its own 2D version, and then you hit a VR button to get something a little specialized towards what you want. And that would be really cool. But I just don't know, and we need to figure out, especially with the standalones, if that's how people are going to be interacting with VR content. Like when somebody puts on one of those standalones, are they going to be browsing the web or are they just going to be jumping into an app store? Right.
I think I have two thoughts on that. And one being that the environment that I see standalone headsets being used the most, or a big environment, one of the main use cases would probably be kind of like in bed, or when you're like lying down. You know how much you use your phone or your computer, you know, just to browse or whatever, watch something when you're in bed before and after you go to sleep, not after you wake up. And the second thing I wanted to address was that perhaps like the web VR approach, the A-frame approach to these things will probably make sense the most when you're up and about in the world, and like especially with an AR. Let's say that we actually get to a point where we do have headsets, right? AR headsets that we can walk around in. Mm-hmm. We're probably a few years away from it. But what's going to be the main point of content coming into your eyes from that? Is it going to be siloed through some of these networks that we already have mobily, or is it going to be like more like you get to a piece of content location based where you have access to it from everywhere, but you'd have specialized things at specialized locations? Like, I think that's where the web starts to become more of a thing for actually accessing content. I don't know. What are you guys in terms of AR and web VR making a bigger point for that?
As in, I guess, like having a specialized headset for both?
No. I just mean totally terms of like, I think I get the point of VR. If it's going to be a thing that you have at home on a computer or even standalone, and the apps downloaded is actually way more convenient than trying to access, you know, the internet and being able to stream everything through every time.
Yeah.
But with AR, yeah, perhaps, where you don't actually have to create an entire environment, right? It's maybe just certain elements and small polygon objects that you're accessing, that becoming like more important for AR. That was my rant of
that's
AR.
I think it actually makes a lot of sense. I mean, especially with Google's even making strides with this, with I think what they're calling it Web XR, but it's really just Web AR, where you're just downloading like a piece of content. That said, I don't know what the actual format of that's going to look like. It might be a Web AR type of thing, or maybe it's just going to be like you set up a script and like an object associated with that, and then it just interacts with the world as opposed to like having to build a whole experience yourself.
Right.
And I think that kind of depends on how consumers are going to interact with AR, and there's still a lot of experimentation that needs to be done, even from like the user usage point of view and what they actually want to do.
You guys have been building AR apps recently, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's been a lot of fun.
AR kit app.
Nice.
Yeah, we got started a few months ago, actually, but just we saw that AR kit came out. That was incredibly exciting. Before, we had done some HoloLens tutorials, but we saw as a big problem there that there wasn't that big of an audience. I mean, how many people have HoloLens that they're trying to develop? Not that many. But then ARKit came out, and we did some tutorials on that. We were having a lot of fun. The integration with Unity is pretty solid, really incredible. And so then we started developing a game for it. It's named Artillery Bay. And then, Vasant, do you want to talk a bit about it?
Yeah. Also, real quick on the Unity interface, we got a chance to meet the person who was actually developing at Unity at the event we were at. Cool. So that was really, really awesome. Really awesome dude.
Yeah, give him and, a shout out.
Yeah, so the premise of the game, his name is Jimmy. I think his Twitter handle is at JimmyJamJam.
Nice.
So you can follow him there. And or definitely just check out the Unity blog, and you'll definitely find articles written by him.
Yeah, he's all over the forums, too. If you go on the AR Pit forum and ask a question, this guy has been answering tons of them.
Hell yeah.
It just goes to show how great the community is. But so our game, it's called Artillery Bay. It's a local multiplayer type of game, kind of hybrid between like multiplayer, bullet hell. You're set on this bay. You have all the players are represented by ships, and you're trying to last for as long as possible, shooting out ships. We've got like a variety of ships, a giant boss ship that you're going to take down. Each one's unique. And you're just trying to get the high score. Really simple. We're trying to make it simple, but like we also think that there's a huge value to the multiplayer component of things. That just makes it so much more fun.
Is it released?
Not yet.
No, so we're about 2 months out.
Nice. It's been a fun journey of developing it. I mean, the design questions for AR are so extensive, and the need to experiment is even more than VR. I mean, they both have a huge need for experimentation, but a lot of the fun has been just around learning what works and what doesn't and trying out different things with AR kit.
No, completely. I mean, even input is a huge, it's a huge question to be answered for AR kit games and apps. So tell us a little bit of, in terms of the design of this game, like how did you approach it? What kind of decisions did you have to decide on to create these games?
Sure. Well, so I mean, the design, or go for it.
Well, there's just so many that we're both eager to jump in, and we'll probably have different ones too. But I feel like one of the most basic ones that we know from coming in from, especially having background with HoloLens, is there might be a formal term for this, but we just on our team call it the windowing effect, which is that for HoloLens, when you see the demo videos, it looks awesome. Like there's this whole world around you that seems like it's augmented and has these 3D visuals, but in reality, you actually have a really small field of view and window into this augmented world. And the same thing's true on a mobile phone when you're using ARKit or ARCore. So one of the first design things that we had to realize.
Let's stop for a second. I don't know if you're hearing this, but like your voice is becoming pretty just like low bitrate, garbled. I don't know if you're on Wi-Fi.
I was hearing it from you before. Can you hear anything?
Yeah. Or what?
I've been hearing it as a little bit of garbled for Hassan. I thought it was on my side. Oh, okay.
I'm hearing. Yeah, it as but well.
Is it still going?
Yeah. It came in like 10 minutes ago.
Also, one thing is, I think I just found out my battery is like at 15%. So
okay. Let's wrap this up.
I can join on PC, but like, yeah, either.
I do. Well, let's wrap this up in the next like few, like 5 minutes or so. How about that?
Okay.
And your phone is off. Okay.
Yeah. I don't know if I should jump back in if it's going to be choppy. Is it still?
Yeah, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Okay. Hassan, take it away. Make sure to talk about windowing. There's that. And then what else would be a big one?
I'll wing it. Multiplayer is always fun. There's
scale. I'd like
scale and multiplayer. Yeah. Cool. And less is more stuff.
I'll ask the question again.
Yeah.
So for the design of your AR kit game or AR core, let's start it again. For the design of your mobile AR game, can you, I guess, kind of tell me some of the features that you guys have to really think through and have to actually design for?
I mean, geez, there's definitely so much, especially because ARKit's like,
there's no one you
can. It came out what, 3 months ago, and like, exactly, right? we're on our own here. So I mean, high level, like we're thinking one like. This is kind of, I'm just going to rehash what we said during our meeting, the meetup, because like there's so much there. One, we really think multiplayer, just having people in the same space, like playing with each other, like is so valuable to increasing the engagement. That's something that Hassan and I, like we play our game like single player, it's all right, it's fun. And then we do multiplayer, it's like tens of times way more fun, just like seeing someone die or like trying to save someone. There's just a lot of interactions that really make multiplayer unique in that sense. You see it also with Pokemon Go also, like you have these people that are out there in their own kind of virtual world, but they're able to play together, and that's what like really makes it unique. So we definitely think there's something there. The other thing is just like input wise, we feel like AR, especially now, I mean, we talked a little bit about how at that meetup, like only 5 out of like 70 or 80 people had actually tried AR. And so we have to keep that in mind when we design. Like there are things about like, this might be someone's first time trying AR, and like you want to make it intuitive for them, but also engaging at the same time. And one of the easiest ways to do that is by basically making it having less is more, which basically means provide little, but make that little really, really important and impactful. This kind of goes back to like even basic game design, where like if you take a look at Mario, there's such a good video on like someone breaking down the first level of Mario, right? And how there's like these like mini little details that like the player's not going to notice, and that like, they already have like this very limited input, and yet they're so able to have so much fun. So it's really taking that and expounding upon that into this new medium. So that's another design detail that's incredibly hard. And then the last thing is this windowing effect, which is Hassan's done several tutorials on the HoloLens, and like right in those specific cases, you have a very small window where augmentation happens. The same thing's true with mobile AR, where it's a little bigger than like the field of view that you would get on the HoloLens, but still relatively small. So you basically have to make sure that any details you want have to be within that window at all times to help guide the user to either walk around or rotate their phone or do anything of that nature to basically get them to do what you want. So keeping the window in mind is a huge, huge important factor. And there's a lot of tons of other like mobile AR specific ones, but these are kind of like the high level ones that we really think are impactful for first time AR developers.
Cool. That's a great set of points. I think I quickly want to mention the Mario kind of guidelines that you were talking about. I think I recently saw it in a video as well, where like if you look at the first screen that you get when you're going through, you know, world 1, it teaches you how to jump over It teaches you how to jump over enemies, land on them and kill them, jump and hit two you know, question mark boxes that just give you money, and one that gives you the mushroom.
Yeah.
And so you, and then the next screen after that are the two pipes and learning how to jump at variable heights. And those, that essentially is the entire game, right? Like, in within the first two screens, you've learned everything in a very native way. So, yeah, that's a great guideline to kind of try and emulate.
Yeah, I think there's the video, I think, was, it's an interview with Miyamoto on Vox. So I'm sure if you like Google that, you'll be able to find it.
That must be where I'm copying this from. Awesome. Well, thank you guys for being here. This has been a really fun podcast. How can people find you specifically and Fused VR?
So you can find us on Twitter at Fused VR, and you can find us on YouTube at youtube.com/FusedMan.
Awesome. And you are FusedMan on Twitter, or I guess, or you are the Fused.
Yeah, I'm FusedMan on Twitter.
Awesome.
And Hassan, I'm the one and only.
I'm not very active on Twitter. Might get on Instagram. Cool. But not too much on social media.
What's your Instagram? Or if you want to plug it.
Right now, I'm actually toying around with different names right now. For our channel, we've been trying to get me a nickname. I still don't have one. On Instagram, I'm currently BuildHK, but we'll see. Might change.
You could be like a construction company in Hong Kong, actually.
Yeah. Could sell it to old Hong Kong. I like that.
All right, guys. Thanks for being here. Thank you, everybody, for listening. If you can give us a comment on our podcast page, that would be awesome. Tweet at us at ResearchVRcast. You can find us on Facebook at ResearchVRpodcast. And thank you guys for joining us again, Hassan and Vasant. And
thanks for having us.
Thanks so much. Bye.